Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. It was 34 years ago this month when John Lennon was murdered on the sidewalk outside of his New York apartment building. Lennon's death came just a short time after his return to making music and the release of the Double Fantasy album he recorded with his wife, Yoko Ono.
Lennon's death touched the lives of millions around the world, but had a more direct impact on the life of a man named Jack Douglas and a family in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Writer Tom Matthews tells that little-known story in the December issue of Milwaukee Magazine, and he joins us in the studio to share more about it. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Jack Douglas is not really a household name for most people today, so let's start by having you tell us who he is and why he's significant.
Well, in a way, I've been working on this story for 40 years because I was 15 in 1975, and I was the kid sitting in his basement in Janesville reading the back of all my rock albums, and Jack Douglas's name as editor or engineer or producer was on the back of a lot of these albums. He worked with Alice Cooper. He did all the great Aerosmith albums. Over the course of the 70s, he became one of the top rock producers in New York, but he also famously discovered Cheap Trick playing in Waukesha and produced their first album, which is brilliant. But as a kid, I couldn't figure out why that happened because I knew from the rock magazines he was very much an East Coast guy. What in the world was he doing in Waukesha, Wisconsin? There was stories he had family here, and that's really all I ever knew.
Well, and so how did you go about trying to figure out what his connection
was? At some point over the past 10 years, I must have wanted to pursue something to write about Jack. And I got hold of his email address. And once or twice a year, I'd send him a note and basically just, you know, sort of your fanboy note. And he'd respond. So I had that connection to him. And usually when I had something published music related, I'd send him a copy. And he usually had something nice to say. But the last couple times, he would quickly start talking about his kids. I think this was last year on this time. And he told me his son had just got his first Grammy nomination. He's a Latin jazz drummer. And he would tell me his daughter is a very influential writer in covering the art scene in New York. And they both grew up in Waukesha. So it suddenly clicked with me, here's the story.
Well, and as we find out in the course of reading this piece, his daughter certainly was kind of reluctant to really talk about her dad.
Well, Jack Douglas, it's an amazing story. Jack Douglas, at the end of the – or beginning of the 80s Jack Douglas was the producer who was handpicked by John Lennon and Yoko Ono to produce Double Fantasy, which was Lennon's sort of big comeback album after he'd sort of gone away for 5 years. By this point, we need to back up a little bit. The story actually starts in 1966. Jack Douglas is 20 years old. He's already a touring musician, and he's playing a gig in Green Bay. Before or after that, he knows that a band he wants to see is playing in Milwaukee. So he comes down here, and he goes to a club called The Scene, which was
just around the corner from where we're sitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right where Grand Avenue Mall is now. It was one of Frank Balistrieri's clubs, and it was only open for about 5 years, from like 65 to 70. But Hendrix played there. Miles Davis played there. Sounded like a real hotbed of what was going on then. So Jack comes down here, and he meets a 20-year-old cocktail waitress named Lori Thiel. She is from Waukesha. There's the family connection. He is blown away by her. She wants nothing to do with him. He heads back to the East Coast. He's back here a few months later with a different band playing in Milwaukee. Through a weird set of circumstances, he meets her again. and commits to wooing her.
He's smitten, really.
Yes, yes. And succeeds to the extent that about a year later in 67, she had been a UWM student. She drops out of school. She heads to New York. And they were married in 68. So that's sort of the beginning of the story. That's how we get from Waukesha to New York.
And they're both in a position to sort of get in on the ground floor of what they're interested in.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat story. And it was interesting learning about Laurie, who unfortunately passed away in 99. And again, culturally, this is just a really interesting time for young people. It was kind of everyone was being told the world is yours. and she really flourished. She apparently was a very talented poet in school. She wrote. And just to support themselves, she started – I think she was a secretary at NBC for a while and then hooked up in a similar job for a documentary filmmaker. And she really learned her way into filmmaking to the point where she finally was working on a series that was hosted by Arthur Godfrey, which baby boomers would know as sort of a pioneer of radio and television. And she was then traveling all over the country working on these documentaries that were being broadcast on ABC and were winning Emmys and things. So she was really on her way with her career. At the same time, Jack worked himself his way up. He began as a janitor at the Record Plant, which is a famous recording studio in New York. And his career took off once he got in with Aerosmith. And for a time, it was quite the fairy tale. But the industry that Jack worked in was not the healthiest industry to be involved in. And the expected things happened, and Jack strayed. And by about 78, their marriage had fallen apart, and Laurie and their two kids by then, Sarah and Colin, who were I think Sarah was 4 and Colin was 2, moved back to Waukesha. So that's kind of when things fell apart for the family.
But in the years leading up to that, Jack had a kind of a chance meeting with John Lennon, and the two hit it off.
It's an amazing story. 6 months before Jack first came to Milwaukee, he and a friend jumped a tramp steamer. This is December of 65. And they just go to Liverpool at the peak of Beatlemania because they just, I guess, they felt the call to go there without any proper papers. And they were fairly quickly thrown out of the country and apparently made a lot of noise in the process. They got in the local paper. Jump forward 6 years. Jack is now an editor at the Record Plant where Lennon is working on the album Imagine. One day, Jack is cutting tape in this little cubbyhole of a space he had. The door opens and it's John Lennon on a cigarette break and asking if it's okay if he sits here and has a cigarette. So Jack cuts tape.
Gee, I guess that'd be okay.
Yeah. He was hoping for McCartney. So Jack sits there for like 10 minutes nervously, you know, doing his job. Finally figures he has a pretty good way to spark up conversation. So he says, hey, you know, I've been to Liverpool. And he tells him the story. And John Lennon starts laughing. He says, you're that crazy American. It turns out Lennon was in Liverpool at that time and saw Jack in the newspaper, even remembered the guitar that Jack was holding on the front page of the paper. And it's an amazing circumstance. And over the course of the 70s, then Jack worked on various Lennon and Yoko Ono albums. So at the time that Double Fantasy came around, he was the guy that Lennon wanted to work with again.
So Double Fantasy comes out, John Lennon is murdered, and Jack Douglas's world starts spiraling downhill.
Yeah, it was, you know, for anyone, any baby boomer, that was just an awful, awful night, December 8th, 1980, and Jack was literally there. Jack was one of the last people to see Lennon alive. They were working in the studio that night. John and Yoko headed home, and within 30 minutes, he was dead. And yeah, it crushed Jack. He was on the Tomorrow Show like the next night, and you can find that video on YouTube, and you can just see a man who just, you know, as crushed as the rest of us were, he was just devastated. And not just having lost this you know, very influential client, he tells the story that he lived very close to John and Yoko. He would normally have ridden home with them. And for years, he wondered if he had been there, if he could have somehow stopped it. So he says that and what happened with his first family just sent him over the edge. And from about 1985 to almost 95, he had a bad, bad heroin problem.
And so at the same time, his now ex-wife is living in Waukesha with their two kids and in, you know, kind of poverty. And it turns out that John and Yoko's recording winds up allowing them to kind of squeak by a little better.
Well, it was funny. For a time, you know, there was the traditional divorce settlement. Money was coming to the family, and they were maintaining. And then, yeah, Double Fantasy was a huge hit. Unfortunately, as often happens, it wasn't that popular. Actually, it was kind of a disappointing album. But once Lennon died, of course, it sold through the roof. And Jack Douglas had never been paid for some reason, either through grief or whatever. Yoko never paid Jack for his work and owed him millions of dollars. So Jack sued, and I think 85. It finally got settled for over $3 million, a piece of which went to Lori and the kids here in Waukesha, and that allowed them to buy a house and step up a bit. They'd actually been on welfare for a time. They were eating government cheese, and it's an amazing fall from where she had been a few years earlier.
And at the same time, the kids really had almost no contact with their, you know, famous dad,
right,
until, you know, some years later. And then why did things start to change?
Yes, it was an amazing turnaround. I mean, yes, he was pretty much absent. He was, again, during a very bleak period for time. People didn't even know where he was. And he was not paying any of his child support. And again, just in the depths of this addiction. But around 94, a couple things happened. His mother died. On the way to the wake, he was pulled over because he had a light out on his license plate and there was drugs in the car. He spent the night in jail and made it to the funeral but did not make it to the wake, and it just really got his attention. By this point, his daughter Sarah is also living in New York. She's brilliant. I mean, she's a great writer. She got a full scholarship to NYU and had been in New York for 2 years, for a time living on the same block as Jack, but almost never seeing him because he was really – this was the worst.
He had reached the point where he was asking to borrow $25,
right,
from her.
Right. The man who had millions slip through his fingers, because by the time he got this Yoko money, it was all – went to the lawyers, and as often does. So something just it might have been that incident. You can imagine how degrading that is to go to your kid and ask for $25, which she had, but she would not give him. She's a feisty one, probably very much her mother's daughter. But something clicked in him. He says, time to clean up. And part of that was he was approached by Steven Tyler and Joe Perry of Aerosmith, who were famously doped up. Not that long before then, but they famously sobered up, got their careers back, and they were now coming back to help this guy who was really instrumental in their career. He sobered up the first attempt in 94, and he's been sober for 20 years, and with some challenges, earned his way back into the lives of his kids.
So you've been thinking about this story, or at least Jack Douglas, for 40 years. Having done the story, it must have been something to finally put the pieces together for you.
It was. It was also very uncomfortable because you can imagine there's a lot of unresolved stuff in this family with Sarah. Colin, who lives on the West Coast, again, is a working Latin jazz drummer. He took Jack back without a second thought, it apparently, maybe because they're both musicians or something. Sarah just had a lot of issues, which you can imagine. She could not get her mind around the fact that in 1974 her mother walked away from a career to raise kids, and just a lot of resentments. And in doing this, I tapped into some things that I don't think maybe they had. They've been reunited for 20 years, but again,
That she was concerned that you were going to write a puff piece on her dad.
Yeah, she really resents his rock and roll fame, which never comes with an appreciation of the collateral damage of what those lives are like. I mean, I was reading those articles as a kid and reading about the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and at no point did anyone in those articles say, I have to go home now and take care of my kid, you know. So she didn't appreciate the fact that he continues to be sort of lionized for a lifestyle that impacted her so negatively.
What does he think about, you know, he clearly has, you know, a couple of big regrets in his life.
Yeah, he's a very sweet guy, amazingly sharp. And really fond of Wisconsin, strangely enough. I met him in New York for the story in May, and within 5 minutes of meeting him, he's talking about Hank the dog and the Brewers. I mean, he really follows this stuff. I don't know what regrets he has. He's very happy to be back with his children. During some of these tense moments, he became very anxious that maybe this story was going to open some old wounds. But he just turned 70, and I know he has great regret about what happened with his first marriage. Again, Lori died in 99 and didn't get to see her kids reach the levels of success they had. And it bothered her that Jack did reconcile with the kids in a way. For a time, Sarah and Colin and Jack were all in New York, and Lori was back here in Waukesha. And I talked to a couple of her sisters, and they say that was hard for her. So Jack does still regret and still has great affection for Lori, who, on completely independent of this, had a great ride for a while. And it was hard for her at the end. I think it was very hard.
It's a really interesting corner of, I guess, not just rock history, but kind of American history.
Yeah, I mean, he really was a witness to an important time of American popular music, the good and the bad. He's really, but it's ultimately a survivor story. So,
well, Tom Matthews, thanks for sharing it with us.
You're very welcome.
Tom Matthews' story about Jack Douglas and the family he left behind in Wisconsin is in the December issue of Milwaukee Magazine. There's a link from WUWM.com.
The song we're hearing is, of course, John Lennon, Watching the Wheels. It's from his last album, Double Fantasy, which was produced by Jack Douglas. We'll take one last break, and then our wine contributor waxes poetical on the joys of sparkling wines. Lake Effect returns in just a moment on WUWM.
Asking questions.